Find all back episodes and other information at mattsaudioblog.com.
This time around on Before the Dragon podcast, we're going to be covering one of my favorite subjects. You. That's right. We're going to be going through all of your feedback from the first quarter of the year 2024 regarding my presentations themselves or the subject matter within. I am so delighted to have heard from so many of you and am very proud to have enough feedback from all of you to present in its own special edition podcast. Now, I will warn you that some of this feedback will be very spoilerific if you have not read the books, because we've been doing a lot of presentations regarding subjects that will be covered in Season 2 of House of the Dragon. And if you're spoiler averse and this isn't for you, I completely understand. But if you're sticking around, thanks for joining me. I'm Matt, and this is Before the Dragon Podcast, Feedback Edition. First of all, if you're on YouTube, you've noticed that I've changed into my trademark Amazon bot jester hat. And here's why. I always get super smart comments from people who respond to my pleas to send me feedback. And that always makes me look an absolute fool. So rather than fight back, I just embrace it because you all are so smart and I love hearing your wonderful thoughts. And I want to start off just by saying thanks to all of you people who have recently subscribed, increased our community quite a bit, have been very active, especially on a couple of our video presentations on YouTube. It's been fantastic to see and hear from all of you. Like from Delta Diva 9, who says, I really enjoyed your video. We'll check out more of them. Or from Wally's World and Sarah for saying that they liked our videos and would check out more. Additionally, thanks to Targaryen Fire, who on our Rook's Rest presentation appreciated my humor taking a jab at Stannis, and to Bruce Milburn, who said that they really liked how theatrical my videos were. Theatrical? Me? But hey, I also value opinions that razz me a little bit as well. Like Anthony, who said, you got to do a better job, kid. Accurate. I'm very thankful to those of you who have just left little comments like that. And believe me, I am open to any kinds of criticisms that you have. I'm a big boy. I can take what you dish at me. But let's just lay one ground rule down. Hate speech is not something I'm really very fond of. And in fact, I won't include it in any of my podcasts if it feels mean, especially towards other people who have commented. Not so much me. I don't really care about me. But if you're hateful to any kind of people or being mean to any commenters, then I'm probably not going to include you in my feedback. So let's start with our Rook's Rest podcast. We have a wonderful little bit of feedback from a wonderful person who we know, who's been a friend of the podcast for a long time, Nightwolf Nim. That's Nicole. And Nightwolf Nim says, Double L was a great switch up to surprise the readers once, but it would feel like a cheat to keep on doing it. Rook's Rest is going to be epic and hurt. Kristen Cole is always a vile little butthurt, woman-hating fiend who wishes he could because he's probably the only one who thinks he can do the job properly. De-bleep, de-bleep, bleep, 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 bleep. So if you haven't seen the Rook's Rest presentation, what Nicole meant by the double L was the Laenor lives. And I agree, it was a fun little switch up. I think a lot of people are mainly complaining because it affects the status of Sea Smoke. Because if you are a book reader, you know that Sea Smoke ends up getting another writer. Probably will get another writer this very season. But you also know from the books that there is a bonding between a dragon and a writer that is only broken at death. So the point is that Sea Smoke shouldn't be available to anybody else because Laenor is still alive. I mean, I don't honestly think that a dragon like Sea Smoke can be fooled by the shenanigans of a Rhaenyra or a Daemon or a Laenor or a Carl. Carl. But that's what the showrunners decided. So, you know, It is what it is. Now, as you've heard me say on many podcasts, I don't know anything about dragons. And I know I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, but quite frankly, I don't care. To me, they're just nuclear weapons. And they are only as good or as bad as the person who is directing them by saying Drakkaris. Not a popular take. I know this. But that's just me. So you can, of course, reach out to me at the letter B, the number 4, the Dragon Pod on the socials or on YouTube comments and let me know how you feel about it. You can also send emails to mattsaudioblog@gmail.com. Once again, I'm a big boy. If you have mean things to say to me, I can take it. Also, Amiruddin, a.k.a. Mr. Secret Weapon, offered this about Rook's Rest. I'm conflicted with how I feel about that upcoming battle. Rhaenys is one of the most down-to-earth characters. To see her die so horribly is tragic, yet at the same time, she went down swinging. I will raise a cup for her. I will raise a cup for her as well. We also got a really nice endorsement on the site formerly known as Twitter from Cats Cats Paws, who reposted our promotion on that website saying, good podcast on Rook's Rest in Season 2 of House of the Dragon with some book spoilers, but if you've never read George R. R. Martin's Fire and Blood, what's wrong with you? You need to read it. The show so far isn't far off from the accountings of Septon, Eustace, and Mushroom from Fire and Blood. Thank you very much, Cats, Cats, Paws, for that comment. Yeah, it seems like it takes a little bit from both, doesn't it? A lot of times, Eustace and Mushroom are kind of on polar opposite ends, but so far, the show has kind of found a way to blend them together pretty well. A little bit of here, a little bit from there. And Bob's your uncle. Finally, on Rook's Rest, if you've seen that presentation, you know I did a gag about what is a rook and why are they resting? I'm not sure if I really expected anybody to answer this, but I got two very lovely answers and correct answers, of course. One from Kaurar Allison and one from Layla. Kaurar Allison said, rooks are also a very popular board game. And Layla said, rooks are also chess pieces. So thanks to both of you for those wonderful additions to what rooks actually are. And here's one last little bit of feedback from Ashton regarding Rook's Rest, saying, I'm convinced Rook's Rest will be either penultimate episode or last. Taking of King's Landing will be the big event for season 3. Then the last season will feature the God's Eye battle. Now, a lot of people have already speculated that Rook's Rest is going to happen around episode 4 and 5, mainly because we're seeing stuff from the trailers that indicate the sowing of seeds, which likely is going to happen after Rook's Rest. If you have the loss of Rhaenys and Meleys, then that's going to drive that home even more. Not saying that that's the way it's going to happen, but that seems to be the logic of most content providers, and I tend to go along with it. But your idea would be great, too. Also, remember that there's still that big Battle of the Gullet that we have to do, and that would likely be in Season 3 as well. And that's our Rook's Rest feedback. It's time to move on to the one that we get the most feedback on, Blood and Cheese. And oh boy, did we get a lot of feedback on this. It's our most watched presentation on YouTube. It's one of our most downloaded podcast episodes as well. And we really appreciate your interest in this. This is a highly volatile subject. There's passions on either side about what happens here. And I know that, you know, we're going to probably, even in the discussion of this, we're going to have to consider how triggering some of this may be, depending on how brutally the television show depicts it. But I want to start off with Matt, Healing Harp 88, who said this: as uncomfortable as it will be to see, I'll be upset to say the least if they soften it, in the sense of softening it for the sake of not making the blacks look so bad to us, the audience. Because while I loved season 1 of House of the Dragon, I am hoping this upcoming season and the rest will more balanced and shows that the atrocities were carried out by both sides and that neither comes out clean in the end. Excellent point, Matt. I'll go one further and I'll say that one of the things that frustrated me about season 1 was the fact that they made the whole rivalry strenuous for both sides. But in the end, the thing that actually tips it over the edge to war is a misunderstanding. And maybe that speaks to the tragedy of Viserys and the fact that even in his last dying words, he couldn't quite get it right because he thought he was talking to Rhaenyra instead of Alicent. But really, a misunderstanding? I think you have to give a little more motivation to one side or the other. And for that reason, I actually feel like the Hightowers were given a little bit of softening as to what it could have been, which was actually in place, Otto planning for this the whole time. And then even in the finale, you have two kids who can't control their dragons. And this is what's going to bring it to this whole horrible thing that I'm getting this feedback on this presentation on, blood and cheese. Daemon's not going to actively seek out the children in the royal line if Lucerys isn't dead, which again seems to be totally out of Aemon's control. And those actually paint the Greens in a better light. So I'm not so sure that the show has taken a complete Team Black stance, so to speak. But great thoughts. Really love them. Next up, we have Sophie the Nutter, who commented on my interpretation as to why Daemon might actually authorize and hire people for this horrible act. As a reminder, I gave it as a scenario that because Aemon has no heirs, it falls to Aegon. Or just the fact that Daemon wants someone to suffer similar to the way that Rhaenyra will suffer. Selfie the Nutter says this: I think it's a mixture of the two. He wants Aegon to suffer the same way he made Rhaenyra suffer, and a son for a son. And I got a couple of other great comments on the scenario too, and this one comes from Laurel Silberman, who says, I think the twist for House of the Dragon season 2 reasonings as to why Daemon picks Helaena's children for revenge is going to be that Daemon has sussed out that Helaena's children are not Aegon's. They are actually Aemon's offspring. The show writers made sure to let us know that while Aegon is turned on by many things, among which are extreme violence and exerting power over those who cannot have any say in the matter, otherwise he mostly leaves Helaena alone, which we hear straight from the horse's mouth. However, we specifically see Aemon, pre-time skipping, defending his sister against Aegon's criticisms and even expressing love, perhaps beyond the natural interest of a brother for a sister, saying he would gladly do his duty had only their parents engaged the two of them, and seems to genuinely understand and even like her in the source material. Plus, he is of the age to be having those urges, being portrayed very much as of an adult age. He's just not married yet because the Greens were waiting to use his hand in marriage as a political chess piece, as is very much their right, as he is the second son, and yet he hates his older brother's loose sexual behavior and seems to take Valyrian traditions as well as duty to the crown and the throne very seriously. So perhaps if time goes by after his siblings are wed to one another and he realizes Helaena is simply not falling with child, Aemon's internal rationalization could be that it is better for him to, shall we say, express his perhaps genuine and tender urges towards his sister than to take up with someone on the street of silk. Ultimately, it is better for her to bear his full-blooded Valyrian children, even if technically they themselves aren't Aegon's sons. They're still full-blooded Valyrian children directly of Viserys and Alicent's blood. There are more clues that Aemon is in love with Helaena that are too numerous to go over from season 1. Anyways, that's my guess as to why Daemon targets Helaena's kids as retribution. Now, I pointed out to Laurel that I really enjoyed this kind of alternative possibility. And Laurel responded by saying, I'm actually really surprised this one isn't more all over the internet in terms of season 2 speculations. I feel like there's really a lot there on a second and third watch to suggest Helaena's children are Aemon's, which is great. But I kind of want to point out to Laurel that almost every other comment that we got after this seemed to be about this very same subject with this very same conclusion. For instance, Grant, who is I Love Videos, said the show has teased a bit about Aemon wouldn't mind marrying Helaena and that he's not a fan of his brother's sexual wrongdoings. I wonder if a son for a son might have another meaning within the context of the show, that Aemon and Helaena may be involved together. She certainly doesn't love Aegon based on her speech. With what comes later after Aegon is injured, it could also roll into Aemon stepping into the shoes of his brother, having his wife, his seat, and to an extent, his grief from the death of his child. Another one from Elaine asserts a similar notion. Daemon chooses who he did because the child killed was Aemon's son, not Aegon's. He and Helena are lovers. So lots of comments regarding that. There was a person who really dislikes this theory. Happily Ever Never said the following. Helena is not the type to go out of her way to disobey Alicent like that. This won't happen, not under her watch. This scenario is purely wishful thinking. Also, Aemon tries his best to listen to Alicent too. He, no doubt, wouldn't do that. It would make no sense since Aemon would have a love interest later on, and Aemon and Helena mostly listen to their mother, unlike Aegon, who actively and consistently disappoints her. Also, they aren't like Rhaenyra and Daemon at all. To pass off bastards as heirs, isn't that one of those things the Greens had a problem with in the first place? And you gotta love fandom passion, because Laurel Silverman came back saying, the existence of a lover later in his life does not discount the possibility of him sneaking into Helena's room as a teenager. There is even Targaryen precedent for such a circumstance. Many believe that the Dragon Knight was fathered by his own mother's brother, not Aegon the Unworthy, who seemed interested in everyone but his wife. Whereas his wife and their other brother were inseparable as children and even begged to be engaged, but as a second son, it was impossible, so he joined the Kingsguard to always be near his beloved sister. But as Aegon the Unworthy fathered countless bastards, his wife remained childless. And the overall outstanding character of her only child far more resembled her brother in the Kingsguard. It was all but known that Aegon the Unworthy didn't father him. But no one really pushed the issue because the Dragon Knight was such a legend. I love all these theories and debates, and I don't really like to fall down on one side or the other in regards to these. I think fandom passion is great, so long as it doesn't get hateful. But that's actually what makes both the books and the show, especially this particular book and this particular show, so much fun. There are so many gaps in the book where you can think things through and kind of almost do your own fanfic version of everything. Or you can look for evidence and find legitimate reasons to come up with theories. But that's kind of the whole purpose of it. I'm not really big into debate culture. I'm not a fan of First Take. I'm not a fan of any of these sports shows that do the debating style. But I do understand that most people are. The beauty about the openness of the source material and the television shows is that you can say a lot of different things and never be proven completely wrong, like the Grand Northern Conspiracy. And at the same time, never be proven completely right, like the Grand Northern Conspiracy. Kelly, John, Kelly. Was my bias showing there? Sorry. Anyway, just keep those great thoughts and everything coming in, folks, no matter what side of what theory you fall on. I'm open to all of them. They're all just entertainment for me. We had more comments regarding this, like from Travis, who put this in regarding Daemon's motivations. The child for a child, in my opinion, is spot on. Have you ever seen the theory in which Aemond is the father of Aegon's and Helena's children? Some key points are that they obviously have a closeness in which Aegon and Helena do not. Great video, by the way. It's my first of yours I have watched, and I'm definitely liking, subbing, and diving into more of your content. Thank you very much, Travis, and thanks for, again, contributing to this particular presentation. This one comes from Ian regarding where Cheese is post the horrific event, and Ian says, I think Cheese knew that trying to sneak out of King's Landing with the prince's head was downright impossible, so he gave it to Blood and sacrificed him in order to escape. Ooh, I really like that, Ian. Good thought. But there's also a couple of comments here that I'm just trying to get the context of, and I've reached out to them to try and get more context and haven't heard back from them yet. Like Crazy Tracy says, she does it because Otto didn't live to his word. I'm not sure what that means. I'm sorry, Crazy Tracy. Could you elaborate more? And I'll be happy to respond to you in the next feedback podcast. And Elfie said, I think Cheese managed to get away with. We also got a correction from Basketball Express. saying, "I'm pretty sure it was Larry's, not Otto, that burned Masarius's place down." You are absolutely correct. I missed that somehow. I think somehow I put together that Larry's and Otto were still in league when earlier Larry says, you know, there's no reason why my meetings with the queen cannot benefit you as well. But really, that conversation was with Alicent specifically about the white worm and the little spiders running around. And here's some comments from Bettina that says, "What if Damon isn't responsible for blood and cheese? What if it is Larry Strong? The horrible PR optics of Aemon killing Luke needs a counterpoint. So with his connections in the dungeons, his knowledge of the secret passages, he can plan the deed. Blame it on Damon, thus creating a counter story more horrific than Aemon's deed. It would be a PR stunt that might rally more to the green side. Damon wrote a son for a son? Good. Larry's can use that. He wouldn't care about murdering kids. I don't remember which, but either blood or cheese is captured and tortured in the care of Larry's to confess whatever Larry's wants him to. The other murderer is never found, probably disposed of by Larry's. It just makes more sense to me. I know that Damon knows about the tunnels and has connections in King's Landing. Just remember that the story is written by maesters from Old Town." Now, I'll be honest, I wrote Bettina back and said that I feel like the show is already set up to be Damon the exact kind of person to be capable of doing this thing. But then Bettina responded in kind, saying, "I'm absolutely sure that they will portray Damon as a culprit in the show. I've just always been in doubt. I remember when I read the book thinking, Damon? Really? He's a warrior, a fighter, a villain, according to the maesters. But this? There's just too much and then about it. The son for a son part, I always thought it was Aemon as the son of the Greens, i.e. the queen's son, not the grandson. In the show, Damon never admits or denies the things that he's accused of. And I don't think he'll do it here either. Thus leaving me to enjoy my theory in peace." Ha ha ha. You see, this is the thing. You can never be proven completely wrong. You can never be proven completely right. I don't like people who just throw a blanket theory out there and get one little small part right and then say, "See, I was right. I was so right." That drives me crazy. If you've got a net 20 yards wide, you're going to catch a fish when you throw it in the sea. But that's not against you, Bettina. I think it's a great theory. I love it. I love what a twist that would be. We also had a comment from Maria on this blood and cheese video regarding Damon's motivations for the son for the son. Maria said, "I don't think so. Damon made things harder for Rhaenyra that she couldn't even survive being queen. Not only that, Damon cheated on Rhaenyra for a younger girl and almost abandoned Rhaenyra. A son for a son is a moniker to brutalize the war further and has nothing to do with Lyseris being avenged because he has never been avenged." Interesting, Maria. I assume that what you're referring to in terms of the affair, you're talking about Nettles. And I'm not actually sure that it's ever actually depicted in the books whether Nettles and Damon's relationship is physical, which looking at it from some perspectives might be even worse. But the one thing that I can gather is that you're not a Damon fan. And I'm perfectly cool with that because, you know, I think that Damon is problematic at best. And finally, we have this comment from Loyalty is Royalty. Love that handle. And it regards me saying in the Blood and Cheese presentation that I wasn't sure if I would actually want to know the real names of Blood and Cheese. Loyalty is Royalty says, "Oh, they are the baddies? Ah, okay. Come on, man. They didn't have to take that gig. They weren't that hard up. You've got Cheese, who's a rat catcher. That's got to be a fairly decent payday. Blood, yeah, a little more desperate. Had a good gig with the gold cloaks and then lost it because he couldn't control his temper. But neither of them had to take the gig. So yes, they are the baddies. Note that I didn't say all the baddies. But they're as bad as the people who hired them." Love your thoughts. Loyalty is Royalty. Great thoughts. Keep sending them in to me. And with that, let's move on to the Battle of Burning Mill presentation that I did. And we got some feedback on that. The first one from Nicole, our friend Nightwolf Nim, once again returns with these comments saying, I'll be excited to see any Blackwood or Bracken content. I've been rereading A Song of Ice and Fire, and it always makes me laugh a little whenever George R. Martin name drops them. I'll be honest, I never noticed on my first read, but after watching House of the Dragon, it really made me take note. Welcome to the club, Nicole. I didn't really put anything together until I started reading the Dunkin' Egg books, to be perfectly honest. And then when I did a reread of the series, especially in A Dance with Dragons, when Jaime actually goes to Raventree Hall and you start to get that elaborate history, then you go back and you notice little things like the Edmure Tully and all of that stuff within Game of Thrones, or just little quips here and there throughout the series. Love it. Also, a thanks once again to Mr. Secret Weapon for commenting on this video, who said, put that in your pipe for now, but don't start smoking it just yet, with a whole bunch of laughing emojis. Let's go. This video's got me hyped for the next season. Keep them coming. Thank you very much, and thanks for laughing at my jokes. Or laughing at me and my quirky sayings that don't really work, but I say them anyway. That's just me. We also got a comment on the video images that I used for that particular presentation. This one comes from Mr. Poncho, who said, damn, I couldn't watch because of the horrid AI art. To be honest, most people will not be bothered by it, but as an artist, I obviously have my own personal issues. And yes, Mr. Poncho, I did use AI, the Canvas app. I've got a Canvas membership, and I used that AI image generator because I couldn't find a whole lot of images regarding the Battle of Burning Mill. But it was kind of a regrettable choice. And Mr. Poncho, I really appreciate your kindness in your response to my apologizing to you. Now, while Mr. Poncho is really nice, there is someone who I acknowledge as my complete nemesis on the internet, and that is Patman23. He also has a great Game of Thrones / House of the Dragon / A Song of Ice and Fire blog that he does on his own website. I'll leave that link in the show notes, patrickspenagle.com. Now, surprisingly, Patman reached out to me on the site formerly known as Twitter and sent this post to me, which was disarming because it was kind of nice. He said, Matt, I've been bad about providing feedback the last two deep dive episodes on Blood and Cheese and the Bracken Blackwood Burning Mill battle were stellar. Really enjoyed it all. I do think that the trailer that had flaming stuff was not showing the Battle of Burning Mill. I think you're right that the one Bracken kid drawing a sword was probably Burning Mill related. The stuff in the trailer that had men on fire was mostly composed of Crownlands guys. Even though you can't see the sigils in those shots, we have a more calm shot in the trailer that has Stokeworth and Darkwind troops based on their shield sigils. I need to check my trailer breakdown to make sure that I have it right. Anyway, these guys have distinctive helmets, which can be seen in other shots in the trailer, interspersed with Highgarden troopers. Not saying that Highgarden is the Crownlands, it's the Reach, of course, but Stokeworth and the guys from Duskendale in their kettled helms are Crownlands. Update, the calm shot had dudes from Stokeworth and Rosby, the Darklands, show up marching with the Hightowers in a shot where troops are marching away from the camera's perspective. They end up all together later in the shots with fire. Knowledge. Actual knowledge. You see why Patman infuriates me? Do you people understand that all of that great freaking analysis done by Patman23, my nemesis, is exactly spot on? He always says nice things to set me up so that he can just totally make me look like a fool. You win again, Patman23. Thank you very much for your feedback, sir. I also, during the Burning Mill or the Rook's Rest podcast, I can't remember which, but I asked what battle you were looking forward to, or if you were looking forward to the Burning Mill or any other battle, and Alcestia and Dr. Chahal offered these. This battle and the Daemon Aemon battle are things that I've looked forward to the most since they announced they were making this show. I hope they do both battles justice and give them satisfying ends. And Dr. Chahal, who is at Dr. Dragonseed on YouTube, says, the conversation of Cregan and Jaehaerys is what I'm looking forward to most, and also good details on your video. So thank you very much, guys, for those comments. And as you all know, we recently got two trailers, and I broke them down just recently in a video presentation and in an audio presentation, and I got a few comments regarding those as well. Seba pointed out a couple of things that they think that I got wrong with my analysis, saying the following. Otto is complaining about Aegon, Aemon, Kristen in that scene, not the Blacks. This is him packing after being fired as Hand, talking about the motivation after Blood and Cheese has happened, all out vengeance now, not what's best for the realm. It's misleading editing for the trailer's sake to think he met the Blacks, a common thing. There's a still picture from that scene where you can see he has packed up all his stuff, ready to leave. Ah, so the still supplements. I'm still not quite there with you on this, but I think that you have a legitimate reason to be perceiving it the way that you're perceiving it. And as usual, I'm probably wrong. So thanks for the correction, Seba. I also made a comment about the two trailers and the whole marketing of, you know, these two sides and what have you. And Lone Wolf said the following. Choose a side is such a good marketing tactic to hype up the show, really showing what both sides of the war are capable of doing. And I think that's the message George R. Martin has for this story. In the end, nobody won, and that relates to wars we see today. A lot to unpack, but I'm excited. And we also got a question from TY, who asked the following. Why do you dislike calling the teams black and green? Fair question. I probably should have answered that. Other than one mentioned by Rhaenyra, I believe it was in the episode where they planned Laenor's death, or his fake death, I don't recall any allusion to them being blacks or greens in season one until you get the two episode titles at the end, which, you know, fine, but I don't think it's very good marketing when you haven't demonstrated how those terms came about in the first place. There's a passage in the books where all of Team Rhaenyra shows up in one color, all of Team Alicent, and Aegon shows up in another color. And it happens years before this war breaks out. But that's why they get those nicknames. And the show never, ever got there with that. They never demonstrated why these people are called the Blacks and the Greens. And so that's the main reason why I'm not a big fan of calling it the Black trailer, the Green trailer, Team Black, Team Green. If they're going to do it that way, then fine. I'll play along. But I don't like the fact that they just expect everybody to know, either because of a couple of episode titles or because in Valyrian, Rhaenyra makes one reference to the Greens, to Daemon, as they're starting to plot how they can fake Laenor's death. So I basically said all that to TY as well, who responded by saying, I totally have the same feelings. It's nice to know other people have the same opinions. I wish I could have seen the iconic scene in the series. Not only would it have been super cool opportunity for an awesome moment full of symbolism, but it would have added so much context. I also have to say, I absolutely love this video. I'm really glad I came across this channel. Thank you so much, TY. Thanks for checking out our videos. Thanks to all of you who check out all of our videos or subscribe to us on audio podcasts as well. You guys are, of course, the back upon which everything else is built upon, and your following me through all different kinds of relationships with Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon has been a blessing for me. I've been very grateful to the people who have understood some of my positions in the past, who have followed me from Podcast Winterfell over to this podcast, and who aren't afraid to tell me, you know, just call me out when I'm wrong. We have another comment from our wonderful friend, Nicole Nightwolf Nim, on the socials and on YouTube about the trailers. Nicole says, that's definitely Harrenhal and the God's Eye. I hope we get to see that up close. Would be a shame to tease it, but not visit. I'm team bring back the map intro foremost, but also team Black Rhaenyra. I can respect their vision regarding the intro, but it's kind of confusing trying to read it. And I don't have the eagle eye for details as some of the fandom. Yeah, I've never was a fan of this new map either. Maybe if they just made the pieces bigger, I would be better with it. But I'm not going to go cross-reference with a bunch of things just to figure out which part of the family I'm supposed to be looking at. Now that the world is expanding, maybe they will go back to the map. But I kind of doubt it. You know, HBO is very brand oriented, and now they've already done this with the brand, and so that will probably remain the brand. Anyway, I appreciate your comments. I'm team let's end this war, more so than I'm team black or team green. But I'm not going to get my wish, that's for sure. And I'm worried that your team bring back the intro map. You're not going to get yours either. Now, while Patman, my nemesis, was very nice to me regarding the blood and cheese and the Battle of Burning Mill, not so nice to me regarding the trailer. Here's what Patman says. I'll validate your opinion that this is Harrenhal in the distance. The island is called the Isle of Faces, not the God's Eye. That's the name of the lake. Okay, hang on, Patman. The only reason I called it the God's Eye was because the island, if you're looking at the lake from overhead, the island is what makes the eye of the god. I got to explain everything to you. No, I'm just kidding. You're completely right. I was completely wrong. Batman continues, in regards to the show of a knight walking into the council and one standing with a dragon in the window, if these guys were Kingsguard, as you thought, they'd have white cloaks. Grant you, I know these shots are dark, but I don't see any cloaks. Okay, I should say that I don't see any white cloaks. The guy looking out the window has a green cloak. The armor styles appear very similar, though. So if they're the same type of guy, I'd say they're Hightower troopers. Now, I argued that it was kind of the green lighting of the shot that actually made that white cloak look green. And, you know, screenshots were exchanged, insults were exchanged, back and forth were tossed around. This is the typical kind of thing that happens between me and Patman on the site formerly known as Twitter. You can find me at the letter B, the number 4, the Dragon Pod there, or you can find Patman at Patman23 there. And you can join in on the fun too. And you can gang up on me just like everybody else always sides with Patman. You can gang up on me and say, Patman's right. I'm cool with that. Now, of course, to be honest, I adore Patman23. I've met him one time at a convention. He's a wonderful, wonderful human being. And to pull the curtain back, our being nemesis is just an affront. It's just a little show that we put on for the site formerly known as Twitter. Although Patman usually is correct in the fact that he's correcting me about something. But I usually fight back out of fun more so than out of thinking that I'm right. But just know that anytime Patman does something to correct me, I have two choices. Fight like hell, or I can just accept his fate. And the truth of the matter is that I'm just going to accept his word on it. But on the outside, I'm going to give off the old wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Of course, if you know what that's from, then you're impossibly old, or you're very well studied in older pop culture. But I'm always going to go for the gag of completely arguing with you. Something that I cannot, absolutely cannot dispute are polls. Hundreds of you are actually now voting on some of our polls on YouTube. I have to pay attention to them. Sometimes it's not hundreds. Sometimes it's only tens. If I got more subscribers, those numbers might increase. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Anyway, two questions have come up. And again, I stopped taking votes on these after the 31st. So this first one is, how important is it to you that we see the Battle of the Burning Mill? 67% of you said very important. 29% of you said somewhat important. And 5% of you said not important. And this other poll that we have, do you have a preference for one trailer over the other regarding the green trailer versus the black trailer? 20% of you preferred the Team Aegon trailer, as I preferred to call it at the time, the green trailer. 44% of you preferred the Team Rhaenyra or black trailer. 32% of you liked them both equally. And 3% of you said neither really hit me all that well. Well, that's a very small minority in that last category, but I'm sorry that 3% of you aren't into it. That's a shame. And of course, no fault of your own, but a shame for me, because I would hope that you would get interested in the show so that you might watch my show or listen to my show. You see, it's always all about me. It really is. And folks, we are finally finished with this feedback podcast. Took a lot longer than I thought it would, to be perfectly honest. And actually, I'm glad that it did, because I got to spend more time with your thoughts. And hopefully our other listeners who didn't contribute will now be inspired by your great thoughts to contribute their own. Once again, at the letter B, the number 4, the Dragon Pod, on the site formerly known as Twitter. You can use that same spelling for YouTube and leave comments on our videos there. You can send emails to mattsaudioblog@gmail.com. I'm Matt, hence why it's called Matt's Audio Blog. I'm Matt, and thanks for joining me on Before the Dragon Podcast. We'll be back with more presentations soon.
Find all back episodes and other information at mattsaudioblog.com.